You're so late getting home from the office. Did you miss your train? Were you caught in the rain? No, don't bother to explain. Can I fix you a quick martini? As a matter of fact, I'll have one with you. For to tell you the truth, I've had quite a day too. Guess who I saw today, my dear? I went in town to shop around for something new and thought I'd stop and have a bite when I was through. I looked around for some place near, and it occurred to me where I had parked the car. There was a most attractive French cafe and bar. It really wasn't very far. The waiter showed me to a dark, secluded corner, and as my eyes became accustomed to the gloom, I saw two people at the bar who were so in love that even I could spot it clear across the room. Guess who I saw today, my dear? I've never been so shocked before. I headed blindly through the door. They didn't see me passing through. Guess who I saw today? Guess who I saw today? Guess who I saw today? I saw you.
I always find that song gut-wrenching. How about you, listener? So you're tuned now to the Sharer Now, just starting with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX 93.5. My topic tonight is, why do men cheat? And they do. And of course, women do too, but it seems to me men cheat more, though there's no evidence to prove that. Maybe it's just that they cheat differently, with more alacrity, with more of a feeling of entitlement. Certainly, up until this current, somewhat more emancipated era, they were far more entitled. Listen to this from therapist Esther Perel, from whom you're going to hear a lot more later in this Sharer Now.
Throughout history, men practically had a license to cheat, with little consequence, and supported by a host of biological and evolutionary theories that justified their need to roam. So the double standard is as old as adultery itself. But who knows what's really going on under the sheets there, right? Because when it comes to sex, the pressure for men is to boast and to exaggerate. But the pressure for women is to hide, minimize, and deny. Which isn't surprising when you consider that there are still 9 countries where women can be killed for straying. Now, monogamy used to be one person for life. Today, monogamy is one person at a time. I mean, many of you probably have said, I am monogamous in all my relationships. We used to marry and had sex for the first time, but now we marry and we stop having sex with others. The fact is that monogamy had nothing to do with love. Men relied on women's fidelity in order to know whose children these are and who gets the cows when I die.
So, plus ça change, right? The more things change, the more they stay the same. Why do men cheat? Of course, it's not just men, but it's mainly men. It's the topic of my share now tonight. That's with me, Sharon James, on Lagunas KX935. How many of you remember Sydney Biddle Barrows? She was the Mayflower Madam, and she knows some stuff. Back in the 80s, she was running an escort service that catered to the rich and powerful in Manhattan. She said discretion was one of the main things they paid for. Of course, the others go without saying. Everyone was absolutely shocked that this well-bred, double-barreled named woman, unflamboyant, dressed in power suits with a preppy hairdo to go with them, would not only become the manager of prostitutes but enjoy the work. Her claim was that there was de facto prostitution in high society, where a woman sold herself basically to the highest bidder in marriage. According to this article in Town and Country by Glynis McNichol, Biddle Barrow's own father refused to pay for education, saying, "Some rich man will marry you. Why should I send you to college?" So what she ended up doing was spending a couple of years at FIT, the Fashion Institute of Technology in Manhattan, and then taking a job answering phones at an escort service. That was where she spotted an untapped market and figured she could do better running a service herself. She says the business to date had been run by men with, excuse my language, quote, low foreheads and big nuts. There were people who called who I could tell were the kind of people who were looking for hot babes. But what they wanted, she believed, was someone who is a genuinely nice person. And that's what she gave them. She said, "I was really good at creating an experience." She says all the women worked for her by choice. But at the time, it was inconceivable that women could be participating in sex work voluntarily. She says, "For most of my girls, it was fun. And the men, they wanted companionship as much as, or more than, sex. I had people call up to have somebody come over to watch the Super Bowl with them," she said. "I had clients who would call the office and chat with the phone girls just to have a connection." She managed to avoid prison after her 1984 arrest, having cut a deal with prosecutors and presumably protected by those rich and powerful men that she did not name. She was fined, but only $5,000, and spent the next decade being followed into restaurant ladies' rooms by women curious to know what exactly the women who'd worked for her were doing. Because this happened so often, she wrote a book, Just Between Us Girls, Secrets About Men, from the Mayflower Madam. She said, "What I learned was that the men who were married strayed to stay. They didn't want to leave their wives and their families and the life they had. People mostly just want to be seen." She does think people like Jeff Bezos's behavior, however, sending pictures is ridiculous and inexcusable. But she thinks today's high-profile strayers make a mistake by turning to amateurs. "When was the last time you heard of a call girl blowing someone's cover?" she says. She still lives in the one-bedroom apartment that she had when the police arrested her. She doesn't live high. She's a practical person. It is rent-controlled. She says you don't leave a rent-controlled home until they take you out in a box. She still eats breakfast at the diner on her corner, and she's currently single, noting that for many years after her arrest, her dating life suffered. She said, "I was one of those people who thought if you cheated on me, it means you don't love me anymore. But after my business, I really changed my tune. My attitude was, you know what? If you're going to cheat on me, you just have to be respectful about it. You can't do it with my best friend or with someone I know. As long as I don't find out about it, and my friends don't know about it, and you don't give me some disease, go do what you want."
Hush now, don't explain. Just say you'll remain. I'm glad you're back. Don't explain.
Tuned to the Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. My show tonight is titled, Why Do Men Cheat? But of course, women cheat. Also, statistically, married heterosexual women approximately as much as men. Of course, the definition of cheating comes into play here. Is it cheating to watch porn and be secretive about it, for instance, in terms of not sharing with your partner? Is an intimate attachment without sex cheating when the fact of it is hidden from a partner? How far can you actually go physically without considering it cheating? These things may be qualified differently by women than men, perhaps. But women certainly do cheat, and they tend to cheat for different reasons. Not so much for sexual variety, although that's certainly a factor with women too, but often for other reasons. I think women probably do revenge cheating more than men. Maybe they have more occasion for revenge. But of their own accord, women tend to probably worry more about the potential for divorce and its effect on their children. I'm generalizing now, of course. Some of the reasons women cheat are they get married too young. They're not really that interested in their husband sexually or even romantically. They chose him for more practical purposes, perhaps. They do it out of boredom. They tend to do all the housework and taking care of the kids and the bill paying and the boring stuff. They cheat because they want attention. Men do that too. But they're also capable of doing it in happy relationships, just as men are. One woman says she loves her man and has fantastic sex with him still, but something about the fear of being caught makes sex sexier with somebody other than her partner.
With my
In his book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, author John Gray says, women are more likely to cheat when they have money and not because they're going out looking for it. He says a woman's financial success affects her testosterone levels, which in turn affect her love life. He says as more women are financially independent, they're less dependent on their partners, and this increases their testosterone levels and lowers their estrogen, which is a hormone balance more similar to a man's. He said, along with it, the increased testosterone can increase a woman's desire for sex with a stranger or a one-night stand just for fun, whereas married women who are less financially independent tend to have lower testosterone levels and higher estrogen, which increases their need and attachment to their partners. I guess he makes it all about testosterone. Don't know about that, but could explain why menopausal women tend to have more affairs, midlife crises, on a par with their husbands. Why men cheat is the topic of my share and hour tonight. That's with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. Women cheat pretty much as their husbands. At least statistics show they would if they had no fear of being found out. They're not as good prevaricators as potential philanderers, it seems. But whomever's doing the cheating, they generally don't want to be found out.
7 o'clock in the morning and the rays from the sun wakes me. I'm stretching and yawning in a bed that don't belong to me. Then a voice yells, good morning, darling, from the bathroom. Then she comes out and kisses me, and to my surprise, she ain't you. Now I've got this dumb look on my face, like, what have I done? How could I be so stupid to be have laid here till the morning sun? Lost the track of time. Oh, what was on my mind? From the club went to a home. Didn't plan to stay there long. Here I am, quickly trying to put on my clothes. Searching for my car keys, trying to get on about the door. Then she stretched her hands in front of it, said you can't go this way. Looked at her like she was crazy, said woman move out my way. Said I got a wife at home, she said please don't go out there. Lady, I've got to get home, she said her husband was coming up the stairs. Sure, quiet, hurry up and get in the closet. She said, don't you make a sound, what's going down? I said, why don't I just go out the window? Yes, except for one thing, we on the fifth floor. Put me in the closet. And now I'm in this darkest closet trying to figure out just how I'm gonna get about this house. Then he walks in and yells, I'm home. She says, honey, I'm in the room. He walks in there with a smile on his face saying, honey, I've been missing you. She hops all over him and says, I've cooked and ran your bath water. Telling you now, this girl's so good that she deserves an Oscar. Throws her in the bed and starts snatching her clothes off. I'm in the closet like, man, what the f*** is going on? You're not gonna believe it, but things get deeper as the story goes on. Next thing you know, a call comes through on my cell phone. I tried my best to quickly put it on vibrate. But from the way he acted, I could tell it was too late. He hopped up and said, there's a mystery going on and I'm gonna solve it. And I'm like, God, please don't let this man open his closet. He walks in the bathroom and looks behind the door. She says, baby, come back to bed. He says, bitch, say no more. He pulls back the shower curtain while she's biting her nails. Then he walks back to the room. Right now I'm sweating like hell. Checks under the bed, then opens the dresser. He looks at the closet. I pull out my Beretta. He walks up to the closet. Get closer to the closet. Now he's at the closet. Now he's opening the closet.
Ooh, dear. There's good enough reason why men should not cheat. Women too, but they do. And why they do is the topic of my share and hour tonight. That's with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX 93.5. I'm going to play you now a TED Talk by Esther Perel, from whom you heard at the beginning of the show. She is a therapist and sees lots of patients who ask her the very question with which I've titled this show, Why Do Men Cheat? And fair enough, why do women do it too?
And why do happy people cheat? And when we say infidelity, what exactly do we mean? Is it a hookup? A love story? Paid sex? A chat room? A massage with happy endings? Why do we think that men cheat out of boredom and fear of intimacy, but women cheat out of loneliness and hunger for intimacy? And is an affair always the end of a relationship? For the past 10 years, I have traveled the globe and worked extensively with hundreds of couples who have been shattered by infidelity. There is one simple act of transgression that can rob a couple from their relationship, their happiness, and their very identity, an affair. And yet, this extremely common act is so poorly understood. So this talk is for anyone who has ever loved. Adultery has existed since marriage was invented, and so too the taboo against it. In fact, infidelity has a tenacity that marriage can only envy, so much so that this is the only commandment that is repeated twice in the Bible. Once for doing it, and once just for thinking about it. So how do we reconcile what is universally forbidden, yet universally practiced? Now, everyone wants to know what percentage of people cheat, but the definition of infidelity keeps on expanding. Sexting, watching porn, staying secretly active on dating apps. So because there is no universally agreed upon definition of what even constitutes an infidelity, estimates vary widely, from 26% to 75%. But on top of it, we are walking contradictions. So 95% of us will say that it is terribly wrong for our partner to lie about having an affair, but just about the same amount of us will say that that's exactly what we would do if we were having one. Now, I like this definition of an affair. It brings together the three key elements: a secretive relationship, which is the core structure of an affair, an emotional connection to one degree or another, and a sexual alchemy. And alchemy is the key word here, because the erotic frisson is such that the kiss that you only imagine giving can be as powerful and as enchanting as hours of actual lovemaking. As Marcel Proust said, it's our imagination that is responsible for love, not the other person. So it's never been easier to cheat, and it's never been more difficult to keep a secret. And never has infidelity exacted such a psychological toll.
It's true. It's harder now to cheat and get away with it, with GPSs and texting and everything else technology has wrought. Cheating, why we do it, is the topic of my Sharon Now tonight. That's for me, Sharon James, on Gunas KX 935. And you're currently hearing from Esther Perel. She's a therapist who often deals with the aftermath of cheating with her patients.
When marriage was an economic enterprise, infidelity threatened our economic security. But now that marriage is a romantic arrangement, infidelity threatens our emotional security. Ironically, we used to turn to adultery. That was the space where we sought pure love. But now that we seek love in marriage, adultery destroys it. Now, there are three ways that I think infidelity hurts differently today. We have a romantic ideal in which we turn to one person to fulfill an endless list of needs. To be my greatest lover, my best friend, the best parent, my trusted confidant, my emotional companion, my intellectual equal. And I am it. I'm chosen. I'm unique. I'm indispensable. I'm irreplaceable. I'm the one. And infidelity tells me I'm not. It is the ultimate betrayal. Infidelity shatters the grand ambition of love. But if throughout history, infidelity has always been painful, today it is often traumatic because it threatens our sense of self. So my patient Fernando, he's plagued. He goes on, I thought I knew my life. I thought I knew who you were, who we were as a couple, who I was. Now I question everything. Infidelity, a violation of trust, a crisis of identity. Can I ever trust you again, he asks. Can I ever trust anyone again? And this is also what my patient Heather is telling me when she's talking to me about her story with Nick, married, two kids. Nick just left on a business trip. And Heather is playing on his iPad with the boys when she sees a message appear on the screen. Can't wait to see you. Strange, she thinks, we just saw each other. And then another message. Can't wait to hold you in my arms. And Heather realizes these are not for her. She also tells me that her father had affairs, but her mother, she found one little receipt in the pocket and a little bit of lipstick on the collar. Heather, she goes digging, and she finds hundreds of messages and photos exchanged and desires expressed. The vivid details of Nick's two-year affair unfold in front of her in real time. And it made me think, affairs in the digital age, a death by a thousand cuts. But then we have another paradox that we're dealing with these days. Because of this romantic ideal, we are relying on our partner's fidelity with a unique fervor. But we also have never been more inclined to stray. And not because we have new desires today, but because we live in an era where we feel that we are entitled to pursue our desires. Because this is the culture where I deserve to be happy. And if we used to divorce because we were unhappy, today we divorce because we could be happier. And if divorce carried all the shame, today, choosing to stay when you can leave is the new shame. So Heather, she can't talk to her friends because she's afraid that they will judge her for still loving Nick. And everywhere she turns, she gets the same advice. Leave him. Throw the dog on the curb. And if the situation was reversed, Nick would be in the same situation. Staying is the new shame.
Interesting that, isn't it? Seems to be the era of entitlement to do what we want. But it's always a zero-sum game. Why men cheat, why any of us cheat, is the topic of my Sharonar tonight. That's with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. Currently playing you a TED Talk by therapist Esther Perel, who treats a lot of patients suffering through the ramifications of cheating.
So if we can divorce, why do we still have affairs? The typical assumption is that if someone cheats, either there's something wrong in your relationship or wrong with you. But millions of people can't all be pathological. The logic goes like this. If you have everything you need at home, then there is no need to go looking elsewhere. Assuming that there is such a thing as a perfect marriage that will inoculate us against wanderlust. But what if passion has a finite shelf life? What if there are things that even a good relationship can never provide? If even happy people cheat, what is it about? The vast majority of people that I actually work with are not at all chronic philanderers. They are often people who are deeply monogamous in their beliefs, and at least for their partner. But they find themselves in a conflict between their values and their behavior. They often are people who have actually been faithful for decades, but one day they cross a line that they never thought they would cross, and at the risk of losing everything. But for a glimmer of what? Affairs are an act of betrayal, and they are also an expression of longing and loss. At the heart of an affair, you will often find a longing and a yearning for an emotional connection, for novelty, for freedom, for autonomy, for sexual intensity. a wish to recapture lost parts of ourselves, or an attempt to bring back vitality in the face of loss and tragedy. And I'm thinking about another patient of mine, Priya, who is blissfully married, loves her husband, and would never want to hurt the man. But she also tells me that she's always done what was expected of her. Good girl, good wife, good mother, taking care of her immigrant parents. Priya fell for the arborist who removed the tree from her yard after Hurricane Sandy. And with his truck and his tattoos, he's quite the opposite of her. But at 47, Priya's affair is about the adolescence that she never had. And her story highlights for me that when we seek the gaze of another, it isn't always our partner that we are turning away from, but the person that we have ourselves become. And it isn't so much that we're looking for another person, as much as we are looking for another self. Now, all over the world, there is one word that people who have affairs always tell me. They feel alive. And they often will tell me stories of recent losses, of a parent who died, and a friend that went too soon, and bad news at the doctor. Death and mortality often live in the shadow of an affair because they raise these questions. Is this it? Is there more? Am I going on for another 25 years like this? Will I ever feel that thing again? And it has led me to think that perhaps these questions are the ones that propel people to cross the line, and that some affairs are an attempt to beat back deadness and an antidote to death.
I remember when I was a little girl, our house caught on fire. I'll never forget the look on my father's face as he gathered me up in his arms and raced to the burning building out on the pavement. And I stood there, shivering in my pajamas, and watched the whole world go up in flames. And when it was all over, I said to myself, is that all there is to a fire? Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep dancing. Let's break out the booze and have a ball. That's all there is. And when I was 12 years old, my daddy took me to the circus, the greatest show on earth. There were clowns and elephants and dancing bears, and a beautiful lady in pink tights flew high above our heads. Watching, I had the feeling that something was missing. I don't know what, but when it was all over, I said to myself, is that all there is to the circus? Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep dancing. Let's break out the booze and have a ball. If that's all there is. And then I fell in love with the most wonderful boy in the world. We'd take long walks down by the river, or just sit for hours gazing into each other's eyes. We were so very much in love. And then one day, he went away, and I thought I'd die, but I didn't. And when I didn't, I said to myself, is that all there is to love? Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep. I know what you must be saying to yourselves. If that's the way she feels about it, why doesn't she just end it all? Oh no, not me. I'm not ready for that final disappointment. 'Cause I know, just as well as I'm standing here talking to you, that when that final moment comes and I'm breathing my last breath, I'll be saying to myself, is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep dancing. Let's break out the booze. If that's all there is.
Maybe that's the main reason we cheat, looking back on our lives as well as looking forward, wondering if it's all enough. Why We Cheat is the topic of my share in our tonight. It's with me, Sharon James, on Lagunas KX935. Therapist Esther Perel often deals with the aftermath of that cheating with her patients. And in this TED Talk, posits a variety of reasons why we opt to cheat, why we do it, knowing how disastrous it can be to our lives, or not, not always. Listen on.
Contrary to what you may think, affairs are way less about sex and a lot more about desire. Desire for attention, desire to feel special, desire to feel important. And the very structure of an affair, the fact that you can never have your lover, keeps you wanting. That in itself is a desire machine, because the incompleteness, the ambiguity, keeps you wanting that which you can't have. Now, some of you probably think that affairs don't happen in open relationships, but they do. First of all, the conversation about monogamy is not the same as the conversation about infidelity. But the fact is that it seems that even when we have the freedom to have other sexual partners, we still seem to be lured by the power of the forbidden. That if we do that which we are not supposed to do, then we feel like we're really doing what we want to. And I've also told quite a few of my patients that if they could bring into their relationships one-tenth of the boldness, the imagination, and the verve that they put into their affairs, they probably would never need to see me. So how do we heal from an affair? Desire runs deep. Betrayal runs deep. But it can be healed. And some affairs are death knells for relationships that were already dying on the vine. But others will jolt us into new possibilities. The fact is, the majority of couples who have experienced affairs stay together. But some of them will merely survive, and others will actually be able to turn a crisis into an opportunity. They'll be able to turn this into a generative experience. And I'm actually thinking even more so for the deceived partner, who will often say, "You think I didn't want more? But I'm not the one who did it." But now that the affair is exposed, they too get to claim more, and they no longer have to uphold the status quo that may not have been working for them that well either. I've noticed that a lot of couples, in the immediate aftermath of an affair, because of this new disorder that may actually lead to a new order, will have depths of conversations with honesty and openness that they haven't had in decades. And partners who were sexually indifferent find themselves suddenly so lustfully voracious they don't know where it's coming from. Something about the fear of loss will rekindle desire and make way for an entirely new kind of truth. So, when an affair is exposed, what are some of the specific things that couples can do? We know from trauma that healing begins when the perpetrator acknowledges their wrongdoing. So for Nick, for the partner who had the affair, One thing is to end the affair, but the other is the essential, important act of expressing guilt and remorse for hurting his wife. But the truth is that I have noticed that quite a lot of people who have affairs may feel terribly guilty for hurting their partner, but they don't feel guilty for the experience of the affair itself. And that distinction is important. And Nick, he needs to hold vigil for the relationship. He needs to become for a while the protector of the boundaries. It's his responsibility to bring it up. Because if he thinks about it, he can relieve Heather from the obsession and from having to make sure that the affair isn't forgotten. And that in itself begins to restore trust. But Heather, or deceived partners, it is essential to do things that bring back a sense of self-worth, to surround oneself with love and with friends and activities that give back joy and meaning and identity. But even more important is to curb the curiosity to mine for the sordid details. Where were you? Where did you do it? How often? Is she better than me in bed? Questions that only inflict more pain and keep you awake at night. And instead, switch to what I call the investigative questions, the ones that mine the meaning and the motives. What did this affair mean for you? What were you able to express or experience there that you could no longer do with me? What was it like for you when you came home? What is it about us that you value? Are you pleased this is over? Every affair will redefine a relationship, and every couple will determine what the legacy of the affair will be. But affairs are here to stay, and they're not going away. And the dilemmas of love and desire, they don't yield just simple answers of black and white and good and bad and victim and perpetrator. Betrayal in a relationship comes in many forms. There are many ways that we betray our partner: with contempt, with neglect, with indifference, with violence. Sexual betrayal is only one way to hurt a partner. In other words, the victim of an affair is not always the victim of the marriage. Now, you've listened to me, and I know what you're thinking. She has a French accent. She must be pro-affair. So you're wrong. I am not French, and I'm not pro-affair. But because I think that good can come out of an affair, I have often been asked this very strange question: would I ever recommend it? Now, I would no more recommend you to have an affair than I would recommend you to have cancer. And yet we know that people who have been ill often talk about how their illness has yielded them a new perspective. The main question that I've been asked when I say I do a talk about infidelity is, for or against? I said, yes. I look at affairs from a dual perspective: hurt and betrayal on one side, growth and self-discovery on the other. What it did to you and what it meant for me. And so when a couple comes to me in the aftermath of an affair that has been revealed, I will often tell them this: today in the West, most of us are going to have 2 or 3 relationships or marriages. And some of us are going to do it with the same person. Your first marriage is over. Would you like to create a second one together?
I saw you last night, got that old feeling. When you came inside, I got that old feeling. The moment that you danced by, I felt a thrill. And when you caught my eye, my heart stood still. Once again, I seemed to feel that old yearning. And I knew the spark of love was still burning. There'll be no new romance for me. It's foolish to start, for that old feeling is still in my heart. be no new romance for me. It's foolish to start, for that old feeling is still in my heart.
So sometimes, as Esther Perel says, an affair can be a wake-up call and can even rekindle the love you'd forgotten was there. Why men cheat is the topic of my share in our tonight. That's Phoenicia and James on Lagunas KX 935. How they do it, and women do it too, and how to recover from it is something also we've explored. We talked about the fact that it's far easier to discover an affair these days with texting and sexting and everything technology has brought into our lives. But there are other elements, other people that have always borne witness to these kinds of illegitimate goings on. Take, for instance, doormen in fancy apartment buildings. They know who visits whom. They know when a spouse is out of town. And they notice things. But they're sort of trained not to say anything. We see everything, says one. But unless there's a reason for it, we don't get involved. The maitre d' in a restaurant will usually know if the couple isn't a legitimate one. One maitre d' says, it's pretty apparent in our industry when people are trying to be discreet. Customers will make off-the-books reservations, ask for tables in social Siberia, and offer to pay the bill in cash. According to this article by Corinne Cirilli, this same maitre d' says, I've trained my staff to never say, nice to see you again, because it happened once, and somebody's wife said, you were here before, who are you with? Okay, a hotel concierge, obviously, will know what's going on. One veteran hotelier says, a hotel is basically a brothel with a bar attached. His way of telling if a guest is cheating, they'll ask a lot of questions about anonymity. They might ask about credit card holds for incidentals, or again, insist on paying cash. Lack of luggage is also a big red flag. You don't bring a suitcase if someone at home could realize it's missing. A favorite florist might know if you're having an affair. It's not only if you send flowers, but how you send them that gives a clue as to what's going on. Sometimes people will use initials instead of full names, says one. Or they'll include cryptic messages, and that's a tip-off. There's apparently also a pecking order when it comes to the arrangements that philanderers order. Apparently the wife gets the higher-priced arrangements. The other gets something a bit more entry-level. Interesting, that.
I remember when you couldn't wait to love me. Used to hate. Even love.
You're listening to The Sharer now with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. My show tonight is titled, Why Do Men Cheat? And women cheat too, but men tend to lie better about it. They're better dissemblers. Their MO is, if you're found out, deny, deny, deny. Men seem to be able to look people in the face and lie to them better than women do. That's, of course, another of my generalizations, but I think a lot of women would agree that that's the case. You know, we remember a former president of ours wagging his finger at us. They tend to turn it around and make the woman the culprit. In my own case, I remember asking my husband if something was going on. I knew something was wrong, but a lot had changed in our lives anyway. And him glaring at me as if, how dare you defile our marriage by suggesting such a thing. And he was lying. They seem more adept at doing that than us women, right?
But she caught me on the counter.
Wasn't me.
Saw me kissing on the sofa.
Wasn't me.
I even had her in the shower.
Wasn't me.
She even caught me on camera.
Wasn't me.
She saw the marks on my shoulder.
Wasn't me.
Heard the words that I told her.
Wasn't me.
Heard the screams getting louder.
Wasn't me.
She stayed until it was over. Honey came in and she got me red-handed, creepy with the girl next door. Picture this, we were both caught making love on the bathroom floor.
I had tried to keep her from what she was about to see. Why should she believe me when I told her it wasn't me?
She knows she not really know the right vivix. I never used to see her make the jig a low flex. As somebody else in favor, you in a the complex. Seeing is believing, so you better change your specs. You know she have a bring a whole heap of things up from the past. All the little evidence, you better know for mass. Quick for your answer, no off it up. But if she back a gun, you know you better run fast.
But she caught me on the counter.
Wasn't me.
Saw me kissing on the sofa.
Wasn't me.
I even had her in the shower.
Wasn't me.
She even caught me on camera.
No, wasn't me.
She saw the marks on my shoulder.
Wasn't me.
Heard the words that I told her.
Wasn't me.
Heard the screams getting louder.
Wasn't me.
She stayed until it was over. Honey came in and she caught me red-handed, creepy with the girl next door. Picture this, we were both caught making love on the bathroom floor.
How could I forget that I had given her an extra key? All this time she was standing there, she never took her eyes off me.
Wanna tell her that I'm sorry for the pain that I've caused. I've been listening to your reason, it makes no sense at all. Need to tell her that I'm sorry for the pain that I've caused. You may think that you're a player, but you're completely lost. She got me red-handed, creeping with the girl next door. Picture this, we were both caught making love on the bathroom floor. She caught me on the counter.
Wasn't me.
Saw me kissing on the sofa.
Wasn't me.
I even had her in the shower.
Wasn't me.
She even caught me on camera.
No, wasn't me.
She saw the marks on my shoulder.
Wasn't me.
Heard the words that I told her.
Wasn't me.
Heard the screams getting louder.
Wasn't me.
She stayed until it was over.
Well, that kind of brings this week's The Sharer Now to a close. On the topic tonight of why do men cheat? So why do men cheat? Well, according to the Mayflower Madam, Sydney Biddle Barrows, whose opinions you heard earlier in the show, it would seem they do it for much the same reason as women, as much for intimacy as sexual variety. The one thing she said that stuck with me was, married men often stray to stay. What do you think, listener? Do you think there's some truth to that? Therapist Esther Perel goes a step further. She thinks an affair can be good for a marriage. Can be. But she qualifies it. She says, like getting cancer, it's not something you would ever wish for. But it can change your perspective on life and who you choose to share it with. If you want a reminder how, by listening to this show again, It Does Podcast on iTunes, or go to our website, kx935.com, which I urge you to do anyway, for our various promotions and events. For the link to this show, go to kx935.com/shows/the-sharon-hour. That's sharing without the G, a pun on my name, hour with the H. This is Sharon James saying, have a great week ahead, and please come back and listen to more Sharon Hours every Monday night at 9 p.m.